My name is Ryan Riley, and you're listening to the Star Third Ward Podcast. This podcast is designed to help the members of our ward family come closer together by capturing their stories. I have the amazing opportunity to sit here with one of my favorite people in the world, Sister Lorraine Ball, and you are an amazing person. You're such an example to everybody as far as your love, support, and service, and what you do for people. I mean, here's just a quick story, right? This weekend, it's General Conference weekend. We just got done, and I tried to make cinnamon rolls for my family, and they were terrible. They were so bad. I don't know what I did wrong. I think I rushed it. My dough was just dense. They just haven't been coming together. And that frustrates me because I love to bake. I love to cook. And I sent you a text message saying, I need some help. And I know you can help me with a problem. And you're like, what? And I was like, cinnamon rolls. And you literally made me cinnamon rolls. I wasn't asking for it. I was going to explain later. And then I got sidetracked. But you made me cinnamon rolls. And that's just the person you are. You're just so loving and so amazing. So I want to thank you for that, first of all.
You're welcome.
But, so this, what we're talking about, this podcast, you're after the bishop, you're our first guest. We just want to know who you are a little bit more. Tell us your story. Like, where did you grow up? How did you meet your husband? Like, what were your family growing up like? Just tell us your story. So first of all, introduce yourself and tell us who you are.
Okay, I will try. I'm Lorraine Ball, and I was born in Durango, Colorado. And my family, my family moved from Durango to Boise when I was 12. And I felt like I was leaving the most amazing place because Colorado to me just had everything a child could want to explore and but I soon found out that Boise had the same things, and you can find what you want to find. My family was very poor. In fact, when I was in junior high, that's when we moved to Boise, I had one skirt, and my sister had one skirt. Mine had blue giraffes, hers had pink. So every other week we'd trade off, and then we thought we had more clothes. But I never felt poor because I just felt like I had such a good life. Wonderful parents, especially my father and I were very close. But then I've always preferred boys as my friends, and I kind of still do, and I think that's why I love you so much. But I always felt like I had such a strong spiritual side of me. It was so easy to feel the spirit, and I just loved reading church books and the scriptures even more than other novels. I was young when I started dating. There wasn't an age preference or recommendation. So I actually started dating when I was 12.
Wow, 12?
But parents had to drive us
right
to the dance or to the movie or whatever. But so anyway, I just always had a really fun life. I was 2 weeks from being 16 when I met my husband, and he was the first convert in his family. So, and he was from Melba and was baptized when he was almost 18. So he wanted to come to Boise to work so he could earn money to go on a mission. His sister lived in our ward boundaries, even though she wasn't a member of the church. So the first Sunday that he came to our ward, I was sitting up close to the front with my family, and I just kept feeling these eyes staring at me, and I'd look back and we'd look away. And anyway, that started a fun summer before his mission. And we wrote And 4 months after his mission, we were married.
So I got you beat on one occasion, right? So I met my wife about 6 months before my mission.
Okay.
We wrote the entire time. And 3 days, and long story short, she ended up living with my parents the last year of my mission.
Wow.
So when I came home, my mom said, you either have to marry her or find somewhere else to live because we're keeping her. And so we were sitting, it was like probably 12:30 at night. You know, when you're young, that you stay up later than you should.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting, we were on the piano bench, and I said, why shouldn't we get married? I was trying to find out where, like, and we started talking. She's like, wait a second, are you asking me to marry you? And I said, sure. And we were married a month and a half later.
Wow.
So that was the closest time with school that we had a weekend that we could do it. It was that Memorial Day weekend, or what is the Memorial Labor Day in February, that we got married. So a month and a half. So I beat you by a couple months.
We would have been married in December instead of February, but my parents couldn't afford it. So he came home from his mission in October and went to the Y, and I was in Boise. And so we didn't get together. Well, we finished out the semesters, and then we got married on Valentine's
Day. Where did he serve?
Gulf States.
Oh, wow.
And that back then was huge. It was Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. All those states. So, but I knew there was something very special when I met him. He didn't seem like a new convert. He seemed so deep and loved, had so much faith and just loved the gospel. And so I did have to break 4 dates when he came home, when we got engaged. He gave me all of 15 minutes to think about when he asked me if I would marry him.
Were you expecting it?
No, because I went down to Provo to meet him after his mission, because he's down there. Uh-huh. And my brother was going on a mission, so we took him from Boise to Salt Lake. And so I took the bus on down to see Ralph. I was scared to death because I didn't know. He had dated this one girl for 3 years. In fact, she's the one that introduced the gospel. So I will always love her.
Right.
And so we met in the middle of the street in Provo. He came to the bus depot and met in the middle of the street, and he took my suitcase, set it down, and gave me a big kiss. And that just kind of broke the ice. And 15 minutes later, he's asking me to marry him.
Wow.
Oh, I was a little afraid to tell my parents. They loved him, though.
Yeah.
They really did. So then from there, we just, we had a really great life together.
What did he do? What was his career?
He was a salesman. Okay. And then he worked for Galbraith and Green, okay, self-funding, uh-huh, and opened up an office in California. And then he started his own company. And then when things kind of went bad economically with businesses, insurance companies back a long time ago, we moved to Boise. And
what part of California were you in?
San Diego.
Oh, don't you love San Diego?
Yeah.
I mean, back then it was amazing. So
it was beautiful. Yeah. And we lived there 17 years.
Wow.
But you know, it became time to move.
Yeah.
When the kids couldn't go to school and feel safe,
then
it was time. And we came back home because we had lived here 15 years, then 17, and then back here.
How many kids did you guys have?
We have 7 or 9.
Nine?
Nine kids. We lost a little boy who was 8 in California. He was in an accident, and so we have 8 living. And we have 47 grandchildren and almost 59 great-grandchildren. Isn't that awesome?
Wow. What was, I mean, we don't have time to talk about everything, but what were some of those sweet moments that you had with your family as you're raising your kids, and some of those moments that you just look back on and just smile?
I think the most precious, honestly, of anything that I could pick out was on Fast Sunday. We gathered together before we'd break our fast, and we had our own little family testimony meeting. To me, that was just precious because you didn't have to bear your testimony, but it gave those who might be afraid to do it in sacrament meeting a chance. And there it was so intimate, and they would talk about their feelings for each other, and there were always tears, but it was so sweet. And then one of our favorite family activities was going boating. The kids learned to ski very young and became very avid skiers. And we just felt like it was a way to keep our kids together, and they could invite their friends, but they didn't want to go with their friends and let us go to the lake without them. So, and they had a great daddy who was a spiritual leader in our home. It's funny, like when you watch conference and you hear things, he would always make a note of what our family could do better and teach us. And I just love that about him. He just led us. And our family always had family home evening. The scriptures, not perfect by any means, you know, but we just tried, and our kids were just very obedient children. We had so much fun together. And when we lost our little boy, it just kind of was never the same. There's always that hole, mm-hmm. There's that chair that's empty. People would say, well, at least you've got seven kids. And I said, you know, it doesn't matter if we had one. Each one is so special. And each one, you can't replace them with anything. But we've seen blessings, knowing that what he's doing and that he's still a part of our family. So we've had some tough trials in our life. We've had economic downfalls where we just were wondering if we were going to have a home. But we've always been blessed. The Lord's always come through, maybe not on our timeline.
Right.
But he was always there, and we just always knew it.
I remember I was going through a rough time and with one of my kids, and I knelt and prayed, and I had the distinct answer that everything was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
13 years later, things are looking good.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Right, so right.
It's interesting that you said that on the Lord's time, right? Yeah. Because I think a lot of times we want it to happen now and today, and it has to be fixed now. And, you know, that eternal perspective, that thinking celestial, and that, yes, you know, we hear from our prophet. But did you work?
I didn't work out of the home, except when I wanted to. Like, I did catering.
Okay.
And I did some designing of some homes, and I did some staging for real estate. But it was all kind of when I wanted to. And then when my youngest was a senior, I just was going crazy. We'd moved from San Diego. I wasn't around my grandkids. I just wanted to be around kids. And so I started subbing. And I subbed for 28 years.
Wow.
And I loved most days. Some days I'd come home crying and wonder, why am I doing this? But most of all, I think I loved being able to find someone who was really, really hard to love, and try and see them the way the Lord sees them.
Maybe that's why you love me.
I think so. You're one of the little troublemakers.
There you go. You know, I had an interview once with a bishop, and he looked at me, and he was just called. I was being called to the 11-year-old scout leader, and he looks at me, and he's like, "You're kind of a loose cannon. Yeah. I don't know how to take you." And I took that as a badge of honor, you know? Well, that's awesome. So you are, and I think it's interesting that you found ways to do things that you love to do, like decorating. I mean, because and catering and things like that, because you're an amazing cook. You have an amazing love for sharing that with people, which I kind of talked about.
I think
about
that's
earlier.
My love language, honestly, because when I teach, I like to bring treats. When I visit, I like to, it's just, maybe I'm not secure in my own self, and so I need food to make me feel comfortable.
It is such an icebreaker for people. You bring treats and everybody just opens up, right? They just love it. And your donuts are just amazing. Just phenomenal. So I love that. I love that about you. And I think that's one of the things that I think everybody loves about you is just the way you share and the way you open up.
Well, you know, it's just like during the pandemic. I missed so much being able to visit and take something to someone. So I even put it on Facebook. The first five who respond, I'll bring you some sourdough bread. You know, yeah. Just because that's who I am. And I had something I was going to say, and I can't remember. Oh, well.
So tell us about a little bit about, there's a number of widows that are in the ward that are all going through different stages of grief through there. And we've talked a little bit about Ralph in the past, and he sounds like an amazing, amazing man. Share your thoughts a little bit about your testimony, about your relationship, the temple, how it plays in, if you wouldn't mind, and that eternal perspective that we've already talked a little bit about.
Well, I thought when we lost our little boy, that was probably the hardest thing I would ever go through. And up to then it was. But I think when you lose a spouse, it's even harder because we had 60 years together. And in the last few years, we went on a mission. We worked in the temple. We worked together in our assisted living. We just were together all the time. And so I didn't know how to be alone. And I don't like to be alone. I love to be around people. And we just were, we taught Institute for 4 years together. I mean, so we just were so close. So the hardest thing, I think the hardest day of my life was when we recognized that Ralph wasn't going to make it. And we as a family, and it was all individual, but it seemed to be the same day and no one knew, that we had to finally say, "Thy will," and mean it, not just pray that he'll get well, if it be thy will. We had to mean it and say, "We'll give him to you, if that's your will." That was hard. But so many sweet blessings have come. Yeah, I miss him like crazy. But I have learned to relate more with someone else. You know, up until, I couldn't even say the word widow for a long time because I didn't feel like I was a widow. That was a whole different species to me before. I would see a single woman or a man, and I couldn't relate to them. I had no idea what they went through. And you can't know that till you go through it. And so I feel like, as hard as it was to be released from the young women, I feel like the Lord put me in the Relief Society for a very special reason, because there were several who I could relate to. I knew what they were going through. And I could love them like I needed to be loved, you know. And I've been so grateful for this ward, because I don't know of any place that the Lord could have put me that I would have felt so special. People just, they've been so kind, so good to me, so supportive. And my kids always say, "Mom, you are where the Lord wanted you." And I know that. People like you and our sweet bishop and our bishop now. I was so sad when the bishop was going to be released. But I had the confirmation when Bishop Bryant was put in that he would continue that support and that love.
You're fine.
I've got my timer going off.
What are you making?
I'm making a cake for a surprise birthday party tomorrow. So, that's why all the decorations. I joined the Widow Widower group, and there's this really nice man who is having a birthday tomorrow. I guess it's not quite done. So, I'm sorry.
No, you're, don't be sorry. This is
5 minutes.
In real life.
Yeah.
You know, I love how you talked about how you got the confirmation that Bishop Bryant would continue. And I think that, you know, we love Bishop Wood. I think everybody loves Bishop Wood. And I mean, how do you not?
That's a given, right?
Right? How do you not? He's so amazing. But I felt very similar to that when Bishop Bryant was called, and knew that same feeling would still exist and be there in his own way, right? And that's what I love about this, the transfer from one bishop to the other is in his own way, he will continue.
Yes.
And feel that.
Yeah. In fact, it was a pretty powerful feeling that I had, that it was not just my hand raised. I knew Ralph was there. That was very, very special to me, because he, and I know he raised his hand to thank Bishop Wood. Can you imagine Ralph watching what he did for me? You know, so I've been very blessed. And so, so grateful that every time I go to the temple, I'm just so appreciative of the covenants that we made and for our sealing. It doesn't make it easy. I don't even think it makes it easier. It just makes it wonderful to know that we will be together again. I don't know how people can make it in not knowing that when you lose someone, you know? And I can just see Ralph and our little son David working together and loving being together, and I know that they watch over us.
I just had this picture in my mind as you said that about David being there when Ralph came, and David being like, "Okay, Dad, let me show you what's going on. Here's where you need to," you know what I mean? It's like, How amazing.
Now, David's so far ahead.
Yeah. He's like, Dad, let me show you the ropes. I got you. I'm here for you. Let's go do this. Right. Let's do the work together, right?
Yep. You'll be my junior companion.
What a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah. That is so sweet.
Well, just to kind of wrap this up, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. What advice would you give members of our ward to be more connected, to be a part of what we feel is a beautiful ward that we moved into a couple years ago? What advice would you give?
Well, that's a hard one. I think we just need to love each other and not look at differences. I think the older I get, the less judgmental I am. We moved into a ward one time from the Eagle Ward, and I'm embarrassed to say this, but we moved into a less affluent ward. And the first thing I noticed was how matronly some of the women dressed, and I'm ashamed to say that. But it was true, and until I saw them for who they were, they didn't need a big house, and they didn't need beautiful clothes. They didn't need fancy cars to be wonderful. And I think I have just learned that I just love people for who they are, and I think that's the most important thing. And, you know, as we've finished conference and everything, you just, I think the closer we become to our Savior, the closer we become to each other. It's easier to love your neighbor if you truly love him, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is an interesting concept, because we read in the scriptures in John, it says, "And this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom thou hast sent." It's interesting. We can't love him if we don't know him. Mm-hmm. And if the second great commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself, we can't love them if we don't know them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about this project that we're doing, is it's just getting an opportunity to have another avenue to know each other.
Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful.
So,
yeah, everyone has a story.
Everybody has a story.
And not very many people know it. It's like an old couple moves into a ward. No one saw us with our children. Right. No one saw us getting mad at them or loving them, supporting them, you know, having fun with them, water skiing with them. No one saw that. We're just this little old couple. And now I'm this little old lady just sitting there. But I feel loved. I do. It's still hard to be alone. But I feel loved. I feel like my Savior loves me. My Heavenly Father loves me. My ward loves me. I might be blind, but I feel loved.
Well, you are. Thank you so much for just spending some time with me, with us.
Thank you. It's been a kind of fun to reflect back on some things, because life's good. It's hard, but it's good.
Thank you for tuning in to the Star Third Ward podcast. We're so grateful you chose to spend your time with us today. If you have any questions or comments about what you've heard, please don't hesitate to reach out. We love hearing from our listeners and value your thoughts and feedback.